भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपः कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरोः श्रीगुरोन्वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्णकरुणासिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकान्ता राधाकान्ता नमोऽस्तु ते तप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरि वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 रामो राम रामो हरे 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 कृष्ण सो यस्टरडे वी डिस्कस्ड द फर्स्ट फोर कैंटोस A quick overview of the four cantos. We'll complete the remaining two cantos, fifth and sixth. So Swayambhu Manu had three daughters and two sons. And till the end of third canto, we discussed the dynasty of Devahuti. And in the beginning of fourth canto, we discussed the dynasties of Akuti and Prasuti. And in the fourth canto, from eighth chapter till the end, we discussed the dynasty of Uttanapada. Now, fifth canto begins with the dynasty of Priyavrata Maharaj. Some of the prominent episodes in fifth canto are the stories of Priyavrata, Agnidhra, Nabhi, Rishabhadev, Bharat Maharaj in his three lives. There are three Bharats, King Bharat, Deer Bharat and Jada Bharat. So, those three lives and the structure of the universe. So, in the beginning of the fifth canto, Parikshit Maharaj asked the question, why Priyavrata Maharaj remained in household life? So he was a brahmachari earlier, why did he change ashram? Second, even after changing ashram and going into grihastha life, he has achieved infallible perfection in Krishna consciousness. So how was that possible? So these were his questions. So Sukadeva Goswami explains that Priyavrata, the son of Swayambhu Manu, was being trained by Narada Muni in renounced order of life, in devotional service. So you can't change the ashram of Narada Muni's disciple. It's not an easy task. So Swayambhu Manu came there. He said, Uttanapada retired, Uttanapada's entire dynasty retired, and the dynasty ended up with Prachetas. And Pracheta's son is Daksha. Pracheta's retired and Daksha went to do austerities for three manvantaras. So there is no one to rule the kingdom. So you must take up the responsibilities of the kingdom. And I am an old man. Swayambhu Manu says, I want to retire. So you please take charge of the kingdom. Then Priyavrata Maharaj was a bit hesitant. He could not say no because father is asking. He could not say yes because he wants to dedicate his full life in devotional service. So then at that time Brahmaji came from his Brahmalok. Shiva also came. And many other Kumaras and Siddhas and so many great personalities came. So all of them came just to convince Prevrat Maharaj to change his ashram. So he told, Brahmaji told Prevrat that Natasya kasya tapasa vidyayava na yoga viryena manishayava naivartha dharmaihi paratasvatova kritam vihantum tanubhridvi bhuyat. So by any means, by your intelligence, by your mental strength, physical strength, your influence or fame or whatever it may be, you cannot deny the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? It's Krishna's desire that you take charge of the kingdom. You may be worrying that, if I take household responsibilities and political responsibilities, that could become a distraction in my devotional service. But obstacles cannot obstruct one's absorption in devotional service as long as he is determined, as long as he has sense control, self-control. So you focus on worship of Krishna, control your senses and take charge of the kingdom, do your responsibilities nicely. So like that he counseled him. So one Mahajan, Brahmaji, another Mahajan, Manu, in the presence of another Mahajan, Shiva, are trying to convince Priyavrata, who is a disciple of another Mahajan, Narada Muni. So four Mahajans were sitting there to make him accept grihastha responsibilities. It's a serious matter. Otherwise, Brahma doesn't come down to solve certain small problems. Right? So, Priyavrata Maharaj said that, okay, I surrender. I accept household responsibilities. As actually, he's supposed to take charge of the kingdom, but you cannot be a brahmachari and sit on the throne. Right? You need to marry and take charge of household life, then you can sit on the throne and then rule. Because the responsibility of a king is also to give a proper descendant for the next generation. Is it not? So he has to accept household life. Now interestingly, we can just discuss one point here. Priyavrata Maharaj accepted to enter grihastha life when Brahmaji requested him. Four Kumaras did not accept that. Right? Who is correct? Four Kumaras said no when Brahmaji ordered. Same order. Same person. Brahmaji is speaking the same thing to Kumaras also and Priyavrata also. You accept household life and create progeny and then take up certain responsibilities. So Kumaras said no, Priyavrata said yes. Who is correct? Both are correct. How both are correct? They gave exactly opposite responses to the same request.
Both had a purpose. Had to propagate the Dhyanamar, the Brahmachari. He had to propagate the progeny, and he had also a purpose for that. And Lord Krishna's desire was for both of them different.
Correct.
Both of them, their ultimate desire was to praise the Supreme Lord by following or by not following also.
Okay. You can please the Supreme Lord by following and not following authority. Okay, great. Anyone else? So, Acharyas gave favorable purports in both cases. They did not say one is right, one is wrong. Although they gave exactly opposite responses to the same request from the same personality. So, the intent matters, as Prabhupada very wonderfully explained. The intent is, Kumaras wanted to dedicate their life for devotional service, and their example is an example of honest expression of one's inability or disinclination to do some service. They are honest. We want to be Vasudeva Parayana, so we can't enter this household life. They were very honest. So Priyavrata's, Kumara's example can be discussed to understand the principle of honesty. So to say no to a service given by a bona fide authority is not wrong as long as you're honest and you have a specific purpose, as he said. Right? See, if four Kumaras had said no to Brahmaji and they are spacing out, not doing anything, then it's wrong. But they had a glorious reason why they had to say no. And Priyavrata's example is teaching us a sacrificing spirit. He is very eager, very enthusiastic to perform devotional service, full-time devotional service under the guidance of Narada Muni. But he wanted to sacrifice his personal desire to satisfy his superiors. So his example is quoted for sacrifice. And ultimately his surrender and submissiveness to his superiors helped him in devotional service at the end. Right? So Priyavrata ruled the kingdom and he also expanded himself as a second sun and gave light on the other side of the universe. Right? He became sun by his mystic siddhi. One Priyavrata is ruling the kingdom, one Priyavrata is giving light. So basically he was not very happy with the movements of the sun. So now depending on the person's caliber, his problem's caliber also will be there. For us the problem is I am getting back pain, sabji teek nahi aaj, or it's getting hotter here, it's getting cooler here. So there are petty problems. But Priyavrata's problem is sun is moving on the one side of the hemisphere and light is there on the other side. And this side it's dark. I want lightness here also. So then he became another sun. Not to compete with the sun, but just to serve his citizens. Right? So like that, when he is roaming around, when he is circumambulating the earth, in the Bhumandala, the chariot impressions of Priyavrata created 7 ditches in the Bhumandala. They became 7 great oceans. And Bhumandala was divided into 7 dvipas, right? That we will see now from 15th chapter. So thus Priyavrata had his contribution in the geography of the universe, changing the geography of the universe, especially the horizontal structure of the universe. Priyavrata's son is Agnidhra. Agnidhra, although he is the son of a pure devotee, Priyavrata eventually retired. So Agnidhra went to a mountain and started performing austerities to please Brahmaji to get a good wife. Pitruloka Kama, he wanted to enter the planet of Pitris. Although he is the son of a pure devotee, he developed this kind of desire because Priyavrata became little lusty while conceiving this Agnidhra. So the consciousness of the parents is transferred to the children. Or at the time of conception, the mentality of the parents will attract a similar kind of soul through their union. Right? So he went and started doing tapasya at a place where heavenly damsels come and stroll. Right? We have some rounds left. You say you have 8 rounds left. you don't go to some sabji market and chant there. You come to temple hall and some peaceful place and then chant. You don't go to local train. You go and stand in front of movie theater and chant. Aat mala baki hai, kar raha hun. Where are you chanting? So the place that he has chosen to do austerities is indicating his desire also. So Brahmaji understood the desire of his devotee, Priyavrata and Agnidhra, and sent a heavenly damsel called Purvachitti. And then they got attracted and they married and then they got 9 children. So Priyavrata created 7 islands in Bhumandala. He had 7 sons and 7 of them became the rulers of the 7 islands. He had more sons. He had actually 13 sons. 10 from one wife and 10 from 3 from other wife. So out of 10 from the first wife, 3 became brahmacharis. Right? No, 3 became the 3 became brahmacharis and the other 3 sons, they became the manus of the next 3 manvantaras. Right? So like that these 13 sons are so exalted. So this Agnidhra became the ruler of the first dvipa of Bhumandala, that is Jambudvipa. Right? And Jambudvipa had 9 varshas. Varsha means a tract of land. Dvipa means an island. We will see that structure. So Jambudvipa had 9 islands. So Agnidra had 9 sons, and these 9 sons became the rulers of 9 islands. And the first son is Nabhi, and he became the ruler of Bharatvarsha. Now we will discuss the stories of Bharatvarsha devotees only. Right? So Nabhi, the first son of Agnidra, he had another desire. He wanted to have the Supreme Personality of Godhead, someone as good as Supreme Personality of Godhead as his son. So he employed some priests, priests did sacrifice, and the Lord descended, and they offered such beautiful prayers. And the Lord said, there is no one as good as me, it's me only. So I will become your son. So he became the son of Nabhi as Rishabhadev. And Rishabhadev ruled Bharatvarsha in a very exemplary way, and he had 100 sons. Out of 100 sons, 10 are Kshatriyas, 9 are Navayogindras, who taught Nimi in the 11th canto, and 81 are Brahmanas. So they are supposed to be Kshatriyas, all of them, but within one dynasty, Kshatriya dynasty, there are multiple categories of people. Some are Brahmanas, some are Kshatriyas, and some are like beyond Brahmana Kshatriya thing only. So a person's qualities decide whether he's a Brahmana or Kshatriya, not exactly his birth. So Rishabhadev gave beautiful teachings to his 100 sons, and through his 100 sons he gave teachings to the entire humanity. Right? So Rishabhadev, the teachings are really heavy. Now I am what is that verse? Nayam deho deha bhajam riloke kashtan kaman arhate vidbujamye. So like that, very heavy teachings. And Rishabhadev eventually became an avadhut and left his body in forest fire. Actually, he didn't have a material body, but as a pastime, as a part of the pastime, in a yogic way, he just relinquished his body. And in that forest fire, whichever animals were burnt, they were also liberated because of the presence of Rishabhadev. Right? And Rishabhadev's first son is Bharat Maharaj. This Bharat Maharaj ruled the kingdom in a very exemplary way, and he performed so many sacrifices, not karmakandic sacrifices, apparently they seem like that, but his karmakandic sacrifices are also devotional service only. Because as he is putting oblations to various demigods, he is remembering various limbs of the Lord. Indraya Swaha, Chandraya Swaha, Suryaya Swaha. When he is saying that, he is meditating on the arms of the Lord, the eyes of the Lord, like that. So his sacrifice was also part of devotional service. So after ruling for such a long time, he retired from the political responsibilities and started performing devotional service in the forest. So once he saw a deer who had a miscarriage, because he was doing his mantra on the bank of a river, Gandaki river. So at that time a pregnant deer came there and a lion started roaring. Out of fear, the deer just jumped off and he left his body and it had a miscarriage. And Bharat Maharaj took that baby deer and brought to his ashram and started caring for the deer. Eventually, he became neglectful of his sadhana and other rituals, and he became more focused on this deer. And once the deer left his ashram, and Bharat Maharaj started thinking about the deer only, he started lamenting about the deer, and he became a deer. So after becoming a deer, he realized that, my God, I have done such a mistake. I have become distracted because of my undue affection towards some materialistic relationship. Right? Prabhupada says that becoming compassionate is fine, but becoming compassionate on the body, you may show compassion to different people to bring them to Krishna consciousness. Because this deer, an animal, an ignorant animal, it's not possible to bring the deer to Krishna consciousness and make him chant Hare Krishna. Of course, Lord Chaitanya has done in Jharkhand forest, but generally, you can't preach to deers, or dogs, or tigers, and make them chant Hare Krishna and come and attend Mangala Arati. So, Bharat Maharaj unnecessarily wasted his time on the deer, especially at the cost of his compromising his own spiritual progress. right? It's not worth it. So he realized it, and he was focusing totally on his devotional service without any distraction. So dear Bharat left his dear dynasty, dear mother, and came to one place and started associating with devotees, and eventually he gave up the dear body and also became Brahmana in his next birth as Jada Bharat. So this Jada Bharat, his Bharat Maharaj, he had the remembrance of his past lives. So now he doesn't want any distraction to happen in this life. So he was totally focused on Krishna consciousness only. He was externally behaving like a dumb and dull man, but internally he was meditating on Krishna. So his father tried to train him, and the training didn't work, right? Then, because Bharat Maharaj was not reciprocating at all, Jada Bharat. So once this Jada Bharat was caught by, eventually his father died and his training stopped, and people were engaging him in so many physical activities. Once he was guarding a field, at that time some dacoits caught Jada Bharat to sacrifice him in front of Kali so that they can get more powers to steal, right? So when he was about to be sacrificed, Kali came out of the deity broke open, and Mother Kali came out. She could not tolerate seeing a Vaishnava being slaughtered by these dacoits. So she slaughtered all these dacoits and started playing football with their heads, right? And her associates were drinking the blood of all these dacoits. So Jada Bharat was indifferent. He just went, proceeded. Then he saw, then when he was sitting somewhere, Rahugana's palanquin was going. He is the king of Savvira. So his one of his palanquin bearers, he was searching for a man who can hold the palanquin, who can carry the palanquin. So he found Jada Bharat. He was looking strong and stout. He just forcefully engaged him to carry the palanquin. But Jada Bharat was very compassionate on the ants who were on the road. So he was walking in a very erratic way. So he's not walking properly because he didn't want to step on the ants and cause any harm. So that disturbed Rahugana, and he started chastising Jada Bharat, and Jada Bharat gave a very stunning reply. He says, Rahugana said, I will punish you. I am king. You are my servant. Don't you understand? Then Jada Bharat said, whom you will punish? I am a self-realized soul acting like a dull man. So if you punish a self-realized soul, that is waste. If you punish a madman, that is also waste. Whom you will punish? And you are saying that you are king and you are master and I am your servant. These are only convention, temporary. Tomorrow you can become servant, I can become king also. So actually Jada Bharat was the king, and this Rahugana must be a very subordinate king, right? So then Rahugana realized that he is not a very ordinary person, and necessarily engaged him in carrying palanquin. He just got off the palanquin and fell at the feet of Jada Bharat and told him to enlighten him. Then Jada Bharat gave him so many teachings on about soul, about mind, about bhakti, devotional service, about the illusory nature of the material world and forest of material enjoyment, which is an allegorical story, which was later elaborated by Sukadeva Goswami. Then Rahugana expresses his gratitude. So then eventually Jada Bharat attained perfection, and the rest of the first half of fifth canto, 15th chapter, that describes the descendants of Priyavrata Maharaj. Okay. So next, Sukadeva Goswami completed the description of the dynasty of Priyavrata Maharaj. Now Parikshit Maharaj asked a question. Oh, in the first chapter you mentioned that Priyavrata Maharaj has created 7 ditches, 7 islands in the Bhumandala. I want to know their dimensions and characteristics. Then he describes the Jambudvipa. Jambudvipa is a circular island in the middle of Bhumandala. And in the middle of Jambudvipa, there is this Mount Meru, right, which is 100,000 yojanas high. And the width of Jambudvipa is also 100,000 yojanas. And in the middle of this circular dvipa is Ilavrata Varsha, which is square in shape. So some details are there. This is the structure of Jambudvipa. There are 9 varshas, as I said. So Bharata Varsha is here. Then Kimpursha, Harivarsha, Ketumala Varsha, Ilavarta Varsha, Bhadrasa Varsha, Ramyaka, Hiranmaya, and Kuru Varshas. So total 9 varshas separated by 8 mountain ranges. And their dimensions are also given. And on top of these mountains, there are some special trees, special gardens, and special rivers flowing from those mountains in the Ilavarta Varsha. And Ganga descends from the coverings of the universe on top of this Mount Meru and divides itself into 4 branches. Right? Alakananda, Sita, Bhadra and Chakshu. And on top of Mount Meru, there are abodes of different demigods. So these are like pleasure abodes, resort centers, not their lokas. Brahma has his Brahma Loka, Shiva has his Kailasha, but they also have one farmhouse on top of Mount Meru. Right? So these are Ganga's paths, and many other rivers also flow. And in each of these varshas, although he is describing the structure of universe, in the middle of all of that, Sukadeva Goswami says, in each of these 9 varshas of Jambudvipa, there are so many residents and there are some prominent residents, and they worship their favorite deities. In Ilavarta Varsha, Lord Shiva worships Sankarshan. In Bhadraswa Varsha, Bhadrasrava worships Hayasirsha. In Harivarsha, Prahalad Maharaj worships Narasimha. So like the different people worship their favorite deities and they offer nice prayers. And 2.5 chapters go in offering prayers only. 9 sets of prayers we will see. So then he describes the full structure of Bhumandala, the horizontal structure of the universe. In the middle there is Jambudvipa. Around Jambudvipa there is saltwater ocean. And beyond that there is Plakshadvipa. Horizontal structure. So now, universe is like this, a globe, right? Now, you see from top, you cut the universe into half, right? Then you see from top, this horizontal cross section is the Bhumandala, right? Vertical cross section is the 14 planetary systems, right? You can see there, 14, now you can see the vertical thing, that doesn't show the horizontal structure. Top view it doesn't show, it only sees the front view, side view. Right. Now we are seeing the top view. So Bhumandala is more or less like a disc in the middle of the sphere of the universe. Right? We are seeing the disc now. And it's not exactly like a CD disc, DVD or 1 rupee coin. It has some like a pyramid kind of structure, slightly. So around Plakshadvipa, there is sugarcane juice water ocean. Then Shalmali Dvipa, liquor ocean. Kushadvipa, clarified butter ocean. Kraunchadvipa, milk ocean. Shakadvipa, then yogurt ocean. Pushkaradvipa. And one interesting thing is, in Jambudvipa there are 9 varshas, is it not? And other dvipas, Jambudvipa is in the middle, it's circular. All other dvipas and oceans are like rings. Right? And within those rings also there are multiple varshas, tracts of land separated by mountains. Right? So this Pushkar Dvipa is having only 2 varshas, 2 tracts of land separated by one circular mountain called Manasottara Mountain. On top of Manasottara Mountain there are 4 demigod planets, not planets, demigod abodes. And on top of Manasottara Mountain, sun god on his chariot will just travel and giving light to all these people. Right? So beyond that, Pushkara Dvipa is sweet drinking water ocean. And beyond that is bewildering. Forget that inhabited land. So beyond that is golden land, and Loka Mountain is there. Lokaloka Mountain is so huge. So we had spent a lot of time and energy to make these charts for Bhagavad Subodhani, all these charts. So one of our devotees, Pavaneshwar Prabhu, from our first batch of Vidyapit, he did a lot of research. Because if you just read Bhagavatam to understand the geography of the universe, you will not get all details. Bhagavatam gives the most essential details only. So to understand the structure of the universe, you need to depend on so many other references like Bhugola Varnan and the 10 commentaries of Acharyas, and there are a few other books also. So he went through, as a Vidyapit project, he went through all those references and he developed on it, and even now also he is doing research on it. And he made a nice write-up, nice project report. So eventually we will publish it also. And he made a physical model of universe with some balls. Children play with balls, right? Those balls are the planets. He made the balls as planets and some flex as a ocean. So like that, he made some portable models also. Right? He is very much into it. So probably for your batch, when you come to fifth canto, he will come and explain this structure. I read only Bhagavatam. I didn't read any other books. So I don't have the intellectual bandwidth and time to go deep into the subject matter. So with this much details, I will complete the overview of the top cross-section of the universe, horizontal cross-section. There is vertical cross-section. So there are 14 planetary systems, and this middle is Bhumandala. You can see there also. Very minimal details are there. So this is Bhuloka. Bhumandala is nothing like, nothing but Bhuloka only. Then from Bhu up to Sun, that height is called Bhuvarloka. And from Sun till Dhruvaloka, that is called Swargaloka. Within that there are so many planets like Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, Mercury, all these are there. That is Swargaloka. And beyond Swargaloka are the top upper planetary systems, Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapoloka, Satyaloka. So it is said that they are not subjected to annihilation at the end of Brahmaji's day, generally. And in some kalpas that may happen also, right, according to some references. So these are the upper seven planetary systems. Bhur, Bhuva, Swar, Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka. And lower planetary systems are Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Talatala, Mahatala, Rasatala, Patala. And somewhere here there is Pitriloka, and hellish planets are there. Okay, this is the vertical structure of the universe, and the universe is covered with all these layers: earth, water, fire, air, ether, etc. And he also describes Shishumara planetary system and glories of Anantasesh. And at the end of fifth canto, he describes hellish planets. There are 26 to 28 hellish planets. So that completes the structure of the universe. That completes the fifth canto. Now, Parikshit Maharaj was hearing the whole description and he said, "Oh, you described the hellish planet so graphically. How may the humanity be saved from entering hellish life?" Right? So, then in response to that, he describes the Ajamil story. Right? That's the beginning of the sixth canto. In the sixth canto, the prominent theme is Poshanam. Protection offered by the Lord to his devotees, although sometimes they may transgress some religious codes. So, sixth canto has Ajamil story, Daksha, Indra, Vishwarup, Indra, Vritrasur, Chitraketu. These are some prominent episodes. When Parikshit Maharaj asked how people may be saved from entering hellish planets, Sukadeva Goswami said they should do atonement. If they have done some sin, they should do atonement, and then they will not enter hell. Then Sukadeva Goswami said, it's like Kunjara Shauchavat. It's like elephant bath. You perform some atonement, you may be saved from the sinful reaction, but you will commit sin again. Just like elephant will take bath, and after coming out, it may throw dirt. So he rejected that answer. Guru gave an answer, and disciple rejected it. Because Guru was testing the disciple, not just forcing the answer on him. Hey, not like that. He was testing. So, then he gave the next answer, Sukadeva Goswami. He said, Jnanakanda is better. There are different limbs, around 25 limbs of Jnanakanda. If you follow all the rules and regulations of Jnana process, the sinful reactions will be burnt, just like bamboos are burnt. Venugulmam Ivanala. But the point is, bamboo may be burnt to ashes, but the roots are not burnt. When there is favorable ambience, rain or something like that, whatever it may be, again it will sprout. Similarly, by following the limbs of Jnana, one may be protected from sinful reactions for a while, but when there is an opportunity to perform some sinful activity, immediately he may perform also. So Parikshit Maharaj was not impressed with this answer also. Then finally, Sukadeva Goswami gives this answer. That is, Kechit Kevalaya Bhaktya Vasudeva Parayanaha Agham Dhunvanti Karsnyena Niharam Iva Bhaskara. Just like sun dissipates fog, when sun is shining so nicely on the the sky, you can't see any fog. Just like sun can evaporate a drop of dew so easily, similarly bhakti can evaporate all sinful reactions so easily. So then he quotes this verse. Sakrin manah Krishna pada ravindayor Niveshitam tad gunaragi yairiham Nate yamam pasha bhratascha tad bhatan Svapne pi pashyanti hi chirna nishkrita. So he says that if one takes shelter of the process of devotional service, and even if one has remembered the lotus feet of the Lord once, he need not see the Yamadutas, even in dream. Yamadutas only will take people to Yamaraj, right? To Yamalok. So he need not do that. So devotees accomplish all kinds of atonements just by remembering the Supreme Lord. As a case study for this verse, Sukadeva Goswami speaks the story of Ajamil. So Ajamil, you know the story, he's a Brahmana, but he was corrupted by the association of a prostitute. He performed all kinds of sinful activities to maintain his family. And even at the age of 88, he had a very small toddler son, 2-3-year-old baby. Right? Means at the age of 85, 86 also he was engaging in sex. Right? So when he was old, Yamadutas came to take him to Yamaraj. So he was attached to his younger son. His name is Narayana, and he was calling out, Narayana, 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 come here, come here. And that boy is in his own world. He's playing there. Many times we may get attached to somebody or some object, but those people may or may not be attached to us. Right? So Bharat Maharaj was attached to the deer. And the deer, he went away from his ashram. It's an ignorant animal. This Ajamil was attached to his son Narayana. Narayana is playing. Oh, my father is dying. He's not crying there. He's just playing somewhere nearby. So out of great anxiety and helplessness, Ajamil was chanting, Narayana, Narayana, Narayana. But actually, Lord Narayana is not different from his name Narayana. And this boy is different from the name Narayana, is it not? So the boy did not respond, Narayana responded. And he sent his Vishnudutas to protect Ajamil. So Vishnudutas came and stopped the Yamadutas. Why are you taking him? Then Yamaduta said, this fellow has done so many sinful activities, and they told the whole story. Right? Even before that, Vishnuduta asked them, who are you? Then Yamaduta said, we are servants of Yamaraj. Then Vishnuduta said, if you are servants of Yamaraj, Yamadharmaraj, then tell me what is dharma? What are the symptoms of adharma? What is the process of punishment? Who is entitled for punishment? Everybody is entitled for punishment, or only some people are entitled for punishment? Tell me all this. Then they give a very elaborate overview of the protocols of Yamalok. Who can be brought? Every conditioned soul who is under the three material modes is potentially a candidate for punishment. Right? So, like that, there was a long conversation between Yamdutas and Vishnudutas. And Vishnudutas also told that Ajamil was a nice Brahmin, but he was corrupted by the association of a prostitute. He did so many sinful activities and he did not atone for his sins. So that's why we are taking him away. Vishnudutas said, alas, what kind of irreligion is entering the assembly where religion is supposed to be upheld? If the masters themselves are trying to capture the citizens and punish the citizens, innocent citizens, Where will the citizens go? So like that, Vishnu Deva has expressed their concern and then said that this person, Ajamil, he chanted the holy name of Narayana in a very helpless state, so that itself is sufficient atonement for all his sinful activities, more than he can commit also. So he has already atoned, and you are taking him to this Yamalok. So Vishnu Deva forcefully cut off the ropes of Yamadutas. So Yamadutas are like local constables, police constables. Vishnudutas are like national military officers. They have more power. In front of Vishnudutas, Yamadutas cannot exercise their power. They chased him away. If you touch him, he will kill you, get lost. So they went. So Ajamil was delivered. At the time, Ajamil, these are his activities. Ajamil, we already summarized it. So Ajamil lamented for his mistakes, and he performed a devotional service at Haridwar, and eventually he went back to Godhead in Vaikuntha airplane, right? So that is explained. And now Parikshit Maharaj asked, generally when Yamadutas are going and taking away souls to Yamalok, no one will obstruct them. What was Yamaraj's response to this whole incident? How did he take it? Was he offended? Because Narayana just immediately intruded into the jurisdiction of Yamaraj and then changed his protocol, right? Or defeated his dutas. Then Yamadutas went and spoke to Yamaraj. They were challenging Yamaraj. Who is the boss? We thought you are the boss. Are there multiple bosses? And even if there are multiple bosses, they all are supposed to be agreeing to the same set of rules. If one boss says, award him. If another boss says, punish him. People will be in confusion. All of you should be agreeing to a common set of protocols. Right? So today we were trying to snatch away Ajamil, and some effulgent personalities came and cut our ropes and chased us away. Because he chanted Narayana, Narayana, then immediately these people, Siddhas, perfected beings came and defeated us, chased us away. So while implementing your instruction, we were defeated. So we are serving a powerless master. So then Yamaraj, instead of being offended by this challenging attitude of Vishnu Yamadutas, he became ecstatic. First time he heard the name Narayana in Yamalok from Yamadutas. He became ecstatic because he got an opportunity to give a holy name seminar, to do some Krishna Katha. So far, he is only getting the opportunity to engage this Yamadutas in punishing the sinful souls. Take this fellow to Kumbhipak, fry him in boiling oil for 1,000 years. Take this fellow to Sachimukahal. Take this fellow to somewhere else. So like that, he was only dispatching orders how to punish sinful living entities. But now he got an opportunity to sit and discuss some Krishna Katha, discuss the glories of holy name. Then he glorified holy name in various ways. And in essence, he said these two things. Who can be brought to Yamalok? Who should not be brought to Yamalok? Te deva siddha parigita pavitra gatha.
Te deva siddha parigita pavitra gatha.
Ye sadhava samadrisho bhagavat prapanna. Tanno pasidata harer gadaya bhiguptan.
Tanno pasidata harer gadaya bhiguptan.
Naisham vayam nachavayah prabhavama dande. Deva Siddha Parigita Pavitra Gathaha. All these great devotees, their glories are sung by great Siddhas and sages also. Yes, Sadhavaha Samadrisho, they have the opulence of equanimity. Bhagavat Parpannaha, they are totally surrendered unto Bhagavan. Tanno Pasidata Harer Gadaya Bhiguptan, never try to approach such devotees. Right? Harer Gadaya Bhiguptan, the Lord's Gada, Kaumodaki, is constantly circling them and protecting all these devotees. If Yamadutas go and try to touch them, Gada will just beat them. It just hits their head. Lord's Gada is constantly tainted with the blood of demons. Kaumodaki Bhagavato Dayatam Smareta Digdham Arati Bhatashonita Kardamena Mala Madhuvrata Varudha Giropagushtam Chaityasya Tattvamamalam Manimasya Kanthe. So, Kapiladeva describes the glory of Gada of the Supreme Lord. Kaumodaki is very dear to the Lord. It is constantly tainted with the blood of the demons. Right? Why? Because the Gada is protecting the devotees. So Naisham Vayam Nachavayaha Prabhavamadande. These devotees are beyond my jurisdiction, beyond the jurisdiction of Kala, beyond the jurisdiction of Brahmaji also. Right? They are constantly protected by the Lord. Don't go to them. And whom to bring? Jihvana Vakti Bhagavad Gunanamadheyam.
Jihvana Vakti Bhagavad Gunanamadheyam.
Chetaschana Smarati Tacharanaravindam.
Chetaschana Smarati
Krishnaya no namati yachira ekadapi
Krishnaya no namati yachira ekadapi
Tanana vadhyamasato krita vishnu krityan
Tanana vadhyamasato vishnu krityan
Jihva na vakti bhagavad gunanamadheyam. Bring those people who never utilized their tongue to chant the holy names of Krishna even once. Chetaschana smarati tacharanaravindam. Bring those people who have not chanted, who have not remembered the lotus feet of the Lord within their minds even once. Krishnayano namati yachira ekadapi. Bring those people who have not offered obeisances to Krishna even once. Right? Tanana vadhyam. Bring those fellows. Asato. They are very bad people. Akrita Vishnu krityan. They have not done any activity to please Vishnu even once. Those people are entitled for my punishment. Not anyone. That means, even if you chant once, even if you remember Krishna once, even if you offer obeisances to Krishna once, they are beyond the jurisdiction of Yamaraj, according to Yamaraj. Right? So, he himself is saying that. So, thus, Yamadutas, Ajamil episode is completed. So, the point here is that Ajamil was chanting the holy names of the Lord at the time of death. What will happen if you chant throughout your life? Ajamil was indicating his son. What will happen if you chant indicating Krishna? Ajamil had a very sinful background. What will happen if you chant with a very pure lifestyle? Right? So Ajamil's story is not recommending very inattentive practice of bhakti or just whole life I can do anything I want. I can be as whimsical as I can. At the end of life, I will chant Narayana and go back to Godhead. That's not the message that we can take from Ajamil. Right? So the main message is, it's actually recommending attentive and focused worship of Krishna and chanting the holy names. Right? So, Ajamil episode is basically a continuation of hellish planets. How to avoid hellish planets. Now we have to come back to the main flow. The main flow is, we left at Daksha, fourth canto ending, ended with Daksha's episode, right? Pracheta's son is Daksha and he went to do some austerities for 7 manvantras, three manvantras. So he was doing austerities and he was chanting Hamsa Guhya prayers. They are some Upanishadic prayers, they are not the original prayers composed by Daksha, but they were some Upanishadic prayers. And he worshipped the Lord and the Lord gave him darshan and told him, so you bewildered by my illusory energy, you will procreate so much of progeny and they will also increase the population of the universe. So that he said in the 6th manvantara. So at that time, Daksha created 10,000 Haryashvas. His sons are 10,000 in number. So he told them, you should go out now and perform austerities and purify yourself of by accepting some voluntarily inconveniences, etc., etc., he said. Then all these people went. Then Narada Muni came there. Oh, these are such pure boys, simple boys. So why they are supposed to enter this family life? and create progeny. They are qualified to be in the renounced order. They can perform full-time devotional service. So Narada Muni came and spoke an allegorical story to Hariyashvas. He did not tell, don't go back to your home, perform devotional service. He didn't say all of that. He just spoke 10 allegorical points that inspired all of them to practice devotional service full-time. Kimasat karma bhir bhavet. All of them independently thought. 10,000 of them independently used their intelligence and came to the same conclusion that Narada Muni is indicating us that we should perform devotional service to Krishna. So that is the best thing. It's not worth that we enter household life and do so many other things. So they became renunciants. Daksha became upset. And Daksha then created 1,000 sons. Their names are Shavalaswas. They are together called Shavalaswas. Then Shavalaswas also were sent for training. Narada Muni came there and told the same allegorical story. And then he said, generally younger brothers follow elder brothers. Now you decide. Then he left. Then Shavalaswas also became renunciants. So 11,000 sons of Daksha were made into brahmacharis by Narada Muni. He is the original IVS preacher. Right? So all of them became brahmacharis. Then Daksha became thoroughly upset. And see Narada Muni's greed. Narada Muni said, I have delivered everybody in Swayambhu Manu's dynasty. I was the guru of Priyavrata. I met Uttanapada. I gave directions to Dhruva Maharaj. Right? I inspired Priyavrata. And I spoke to Prachetas also. And I converted Shavalaswas and Hariyashvas, 11,000 of them, into renunciants. Only Daksha is left. Let me go and preach to him also. So he went to Daksha. So just to preach him. So he was thinking, Narada Muni was thinking that Daksha just lost 11,000 sons. He must be in a very detached mood and renounced mood. If I go and tell him about Bhakti Yoga, he can accept it easily. So with that hope, Narada Muni went. Then Daksha started blaspheming Narada Muni like anything. He criticized Narada Muni. You are Papa, you are sin personified, you are Asadhu. You are wearing the garments of a sadhu, but you don't have a sadhutva within. I am a sadhu. I am an honest grihavrata. I am an honest householder. You are a dishonest sadhu, renunciant. So without clearing their debts to different categories of people, my sons became renunciants. Right? You have converted immature boys into renunciants. Right? So like that he criticized Narada Muni in so many ways. Still Narada Muni was sitting there. Because when somebody is angry, if you don't reply, if you don't retaliate, he will exhibit his anger and then shout for some time, and after some time he will calm down. Then you can go and speak to him. Oh, aisa nahi, aisa hai. Like that. Then Narada Muni was waiting very patiently, accepting the curse also. Because Daksha cursed Narada Muni, may you not have any permanent residence. Because from Daksha's perspective, having a very nice home is a very comfortable situation. Because he's a householder, Grahamedi. So may Narada Muni be deprived of that opportunity. So like that, he cursed him. Actually, the traveling punishment is not a punishment for a preacher. It's a very exciting proposal for a preacher. So Narada Muni accepted that curse. Still Daksha's anger did not reduce. So Daksha, then Narada Muni left. Right? Then Brahmaji came. Brahmaji said, what's your problem? If you create sons, Narada Muni is making them brahmacharis. You create daughters, Narada Muni will not touch them. Right? Then Daksha created 60 daughters. Right? So these 60 daughters gave birth to different kinds of species. Fishes, then birds, and horses, snakes, and all these different kinds of living entities are born from various daughters of Daksha who were married to Kashyapa and many other people. Right? Then the whole dynasty of Daksha's daughters is described. So one daughter, Aditi, was married to Kashyapa, and they had 12 Adityas as their sons. One of them is Tvashta. Tvashta married Rachana, who is the daughter of Daityas. And from them, Sannivesha and Vishwarupa were born. And this Vishwarupa, who is the son of a Brahmana father and a Daitya mother, he became the guru of demigods at one point. Right? Now Parikshit Maharaj asked, how come Vishwarupa became the guru of the demigods? What happened to their original guru, Brihaspati? Then Brahmaji, then Sukadeva Goswami spoke this story. Once Indra was sitting in his royal assembly, so Brihaspati entered that assembly, guru, deva guru. Then Indra thought, kal aaya tha, parso bhi aaya tha, uske pehle bhi aaya tha, today also he came. What a big deal. What should I do? What should I do? Anything special? So he didn't get up from his seat. He didn't do anything to respect or receive Brihaspati. And Brihaspati understood, this fellow is puffed up because of his material opulence. Without speaking a single word, he silently left. Then immediately Narada Muni, Indra realized, my God, I offended my guru. Then he started lamenting and condemning himself, and he searched for Brihaspati everywhere. But Brihaspati is nowhere to be seen. So because of this offense to guru, the powers of demigods became very less, and at one point they were defeated by the demons, and all of them went to Brahmaji and then said, we were defeated by demons. Then Brahmaji said, what else do you expect? You offended your guru. But anyways, as of now, what I can do is, you should go and accept Vishwarupa as your guru. And he is the son of a demon mother, Daitya mother. So he will show some inclination towards demons. So you should tolerate that. But he can help you regain your opulence. Then all the demigods went to Vishwarupa. Vishwarupa had three heads. And Vishwarupa taught them Narayana Kavacha. And with that Narayana Kavacha, so the demigods defeated the demons, and then they again were re-established in their posts. At one point, Vishwarupa was doing some sacrifices and offering some oblations to demons also. Indra noticed it. Indra became very insecure. My God, he's offering oblations to the demons and they may become powerful. So he went and beheaded Vishwarupa without even seeing that he is my guru. He helped me regain my opulence. So he just beheaded him in great anger and insecurity. So at that time, this Tvashta, the father of Vishwarupa, became very angry, and he performed a sacrifice to get a son who can kill Indra. So he chanted mantras in a little different manner. The intonation of his mantra chanting was little different. So Indra Shatroho. Instead of creating a demon who can kill Indra, he created someone who can be killed by Indra. That is Vritrasura. So Vritrasura came out of this sacrificial fire of Tvashta, and as soon as he came out, he went to fight with the demigods. Right? So there was no Balya Leela of Vritrasura. He directly went on the battlefield. Battlefield Leela, Sida. So seeing Vritrasura and his power, all the demigods went and fell at the feet of Lord Vishnu and said, please show us some way. They offered such beautiful prayers. And at the end of the prayer, please protect us from this demon Vritrasura. Then Vishnu said, you offered such wonderful prayers and this is your material desire. Anyways, you came to me, I have to give you some solution. You should go to Dadhichi and ask for his bones. And with that bones, Vishwakarma will manufacture a thunderbolt weapon. With that weapon, you can kill Vritrasura. And Vritrasura will not do anything to you. He is my own devotee. Don't worry. Then all the demigods went to Dadhichi and told him, we have a request. What is your request? You should die, so that we can use your body, your bones, to make thunderbolt and kill Vritrasura. Then Dadhichi said, how can I offer my body? Even if Vishnu asks body, one cannot offer one's body. Right? Because even by compromising all of one's religious principles, one should protect one's body. One can give up religious principles, one cannot give up body. Body is so dear to all living entities. That when someone is coming and putting a knife on your throat, right? Tell me the truth. What happened to that? Something like that. So if you tell the truth, he may cut your throat. If you tell a lie, he may not cut your throat. Then what you will do? You should tell a lie. Right? You should compromise on the principle that I should not speak lie. and then speak a lie so that your body can be protected. Right? So body has to be protected at any cost. Dadichi is told like this. Then demigod said, "Hey, don't say it like this. Don't tell like this. We are so desperate." So generally, a donor will not deny the request of a beggar if he understands their problem. You know what is my our problem? All our posts are lost. Entire universal government system is in chaos now. So just your one death can reinstate all the demigods in their positions. Right? We are at threat now. Rudrasir is coming and then bothering us. Then Dadichi said, No. I was just joking with you. I just wanted to hear some religious principles from you. So I didn't mean to say that I will not give my body. So you can take my body." And he went into trance. He was meditating on the Lord. He did not even realize or notice that his body is getting separated from his soul. He's so absorbed in Krishna. So demigods took out the bones and created a thunderbolt. And Indra took that thunderbolt, sat on his Airavata, went on fight with Vritrasura. There was a huge fight. In that fight, the Vritrasura started chastising Indra. So there was because of this rejuvenated power of the demigods, the demons became very fearful. So demons who were on the side of Vritrasura, they started running away from the battlefield. So Vritrasura chastised all of them, all the demons. "Why are you running away from battlefield? Better you die on the battlefield and you attain a better destination." Right? There are two nice ways of leaving the body. One, by performing devotional service. Second, by getting killed on the battlefield. Definitely, if you go back from this battlefield, I am sure you will not do devotional service. You will do some useless activity only. Better you accept this glorious death. But they didn't hear. They just ran away.
What are the better destinations for demons who die in the battlefield?
Higher planets they may get. Maybe.
And one more thing, bro. What does thunderbolt actually mean? Like, is it a kind of weapon or...
Weapon. Vajrayudha. It is made of the bones.
Bones, Vajrayudha.
So, then, although the demons were running away from the battlefield, the demigods started chasing them and started beating them. Then Rudrasa turned to the demigods and started chastising them also. What is your valor? If you have any heroic strength in you, stand in front of me. Don't start chasing the people who are running away from the battlefield. This is against the religious course of war. So he chastised them, then he chastised Indra. So Vritrasura is basically doing a counseling session for the demons, the demigods and Indra on the battlefield. Right? So then there was a fight between Indra and Vritrasura. Indra threw his club on Vritrasura. Vritrasura caught it with his left hand, you see, the club. It's not even as big as his finger, and threw it away. And Indra felt, "Oh my God, my club is so powerful, and Vritrasura made it useless. So if I throw my thunderbolt, he may render that also useless. So I will not throw my thunderbolt." He was not having sufficient faith on Vishnu's instruction that this thunderbolt is empowered by my instruction, empowered by the austerities of Dadichi. It definitely has the power to kill Vritrasura. But Indra could not believe it. Indra was feeling so insecure to release the thunderbolt. Then Vritrasura chastised Indra like anything. And then he said, "Throw the thunderbolt on me. You don't have faith on Lord Vishnu's instruction. I have faith." So Vritrasura's only ecstasy in life is to be killed by the thunderbolt in the hands of Indra. Because that's what Vishnu told. Vritrasura just came out. And what he has to achieve? All the demons on his side left. All the demigods are against him. All the sages are doing sacrifices to kill him. He's a great disturbance in the universe. So not a single person in the entire universe understood the devotional depth of Vritrasura. Many people may misunderstand us. Right? Many people may not acknowledge us or notice our contributions. But Krishna is noticing. Vritrasura is happy because he knows my behavior or my service is pleasing to my Guru and Krishna. Although no one notices me. No one recognizes my devotional qualities. So Vritrasura wanted to be killed because that's what is ordained to him by Vishnu. He was inspiring this Indra to send the thunderbolt, but Indra was not sending. Vritrasura thought that why I am spending my time, wasting my time on this Indra. So let me offer my prayers. He offered exemplary prayers to the Lord. Aham dhare tava padai kamola dasanu daso bhavitasmi bhuyah. So I want to become dasanu das. I don't want any other exalted position in the three worlds. I need friendship with devotees. So I yearn for direct service of the Lord. Like that he offered beautiful prayers. Even on the battlefield, and Indra got impressed. Indra was impressed. Then he threw his weapon and cut one hand of Vritrasura. And Indra praised Vritrasura also. My God, you are very wonderful. Then Vritrasura, Indra was actually little hesitant to kill Vritrasura at this point, because he understood that Vritrasura is not a demon, he is a great devotee. Even on the battlefield, where one's passion and ignorance are at the peak, he is offering prayers to the Lord and he is giving me good counsel. So he was hesitant, but Vritrasura is saying that, don't worry, victory and defeat are not in our hands. Only the Supreme Lord is always victorious. But other living entities are sometimes victorious and sometimes not. See, I have lost my hands, but still I am fighting. So, I have lost my one hand. Then Vritrasura inspired Indra like that, and Indra cut off the second hand of Vritrasura also. Now, Vritrasura thought that, I don't have hands to fight. So, what should I do? I have mouth. He just swallowed Indra along with Airath. He swallowed Indra and went into... Fight is over now. Whom he has to fight with? Fight is over. And he went into meditation on Sankarsan. So, Indra, because of his Narayana Kavacha his power, nothing happened to him within the body of Vritrasura. Otherwise, no one can survive within the digestive system of Vritrasura. So, Indra cut through the abdomen of Vritrasura and came out of his body, and took 1 year to cut his throat through his thunderbolt. Because Vritrasura's neck became so stiff because he went into Samadhi, Indra took 1 year to cut his throat. So actually Indra was hesitating to kill, but some sages came and encouraged him to kill. Indra was thinking that I already killed one Brahman, offended one Brahmana, my guru. Then somehow Vishwarupa saved me. Then I killed Vishwarupa, another Brahman. Right? Now, I took the body of another Brahman, Dadhichi. Right? I have committed so many Brahman aparas. Now this person is also Brahman. Vritrasura is the son of Tvashta, so he is also Brahman. So if I kill him, who will protect me from sinful reaction? Then all the sages said, we will perform Aswamedha Yajna and protect you from sinful reaction. Don't worry, kill him. Indra killed him. But nevertheless, that's like a seventh offense. Committing sinful activity on the strength of the holy names. Right? So the sinful reaction of Indra in the form of an old tuberculosis woman, she started chasing Indra. So Indra ran and went into the Manasarovar lake and hid himself in lotus stem. So for I think 100 years or 1000 years he was there, and eventually he came out of that reaction and then he was reinstated as the king of heavenly planets. Now Parikshit Maharaj had a question. He said that there are innumerable jivas like atoms. Out of them, human beings are very rare. Out of them, those who are interested to follow the religious principles are even rare. And even amongst them, those who desire for liberation, they are rare. And even amongst them, those who are actually liberated are even more rare. And even amongst them, a person who understood the true meaning of liberation is even more rare. And even amongst them, a devotee of Narayana is extremely rare. Narayana, muktanam abhisiddhanam Narayana parayana sudurlabha prashantatma kotishvapi mahamuni. So Vritrasura seems to be belonging to this red circle. Not this white space or blue space, red circle. Means Narayana parayana. He is a very rare devotee of the Lord. Because although he was in a demon body on the battlefield, where passion and ignorance are at their peak, he is offering prayers to Vishnu on the battlefield, and he is giving counsel, good counsel to Indra. So I want to know about his background. Then Sukadeva Goswami spoke to him about the story of Chitraketu. Chitraketu, was a great king. He married one wife, he didn't have children. Second wife, third wife, 100th wife, no children. 1,000 wives, no children. 1,00,000 wives, no children. 1,00,000,000 wives, no children. So he was frustrated. He was so morose. When Sangiramuni came to his kingdom and asked him, why are you morose? He said, I don't have a son. Please help me get a son. Angira did some sacrifice and gave that payasam to Chitraketu. Chitraketu gave that payasam to our Kritadyuti, first wife. And Kritadyuti eventually gave birth to a son. Chitraketu's affection towards Kritadyuti and the son increased so much that he neglected remaining 1,00,000,-1 wives. And all of them became envious and poisoned the child. And the child died. And Chitraketu is lamenting and Kritadyuti were lamenting. At that time, Chitraketu, when he was lamenting, Narada Muni and Angira come there and enlighten Chitraketu with various teachings. And also Narada Muni brings back the dead child alive and makes him speak to Chitraketu. Right? So Narada Muni also teaches a mantra, Sankarshan mantra to Chitraketu, and Chitraketu gets darshan of Lord Sankarshana within 7 days. So like that, he became a great devotee of Lord Sankarshan. And once he was traveling in his airplane, he became the king of Vidyadhara planet. He was traveling in an airplane and once he saw Lord Shiva sitting in the assembly of great sages along with Mother Parvati on his lap. So Chitraketu laughed little loudly and gave a feedback to Shiva. Ordinary people embrace their wives in private. How can such an extraordinary personality like Lord Shiva embrace his wife and make her sit on his lap in public in the assembly of great sages? He's not affected by it, I'm sure. He's an exalted devotee. But seeing his behavior, other people may get affected and they may offend Shiva. I am very concerned about it. So by expressing his concern, he also offended Lord Shiva slightly. He doesn't have an offensive mentality, but because he had a slight tinge of pride, he thought that I can give a feedback to Lord Shiva also. Shiva is a senior devotee. How can you give a feedback to a senior devotee? So then Parvati became very upset. She said, how dare you? Are you the chastiser or the appointed ruler to punish shameless people like us? You have no qualification to be amongst the devotees of the Lord. Right? So you don't deserve shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. I curse you to become a demon. Right? My dear son, like that she said. Then Chitraketu came down from his airplane and offered obeisances to Mother Parvati and said, my dear mother, I never meant anything wrong. I have full respect for your husband. I never meant anything wrong. But whatever you think is wrong, let that be wrong. And may I be forgiven for it. So in this whole material world, gunapravahayatasmin kashyapaha konvanugraha. So what is the, in this material world, what is happiness and what is distress? What is heaven, what is hell? What is curse, what is blessing? It's all gunapravaha. The material modes only are flowing there. Right? So according to our one's own deeds, the gods, demigods, will give reaction to people. So I don't want nullification of this curse. I accept your curse. But please forgive me. He said sorry and then left that place. So why he said sorry? Because Parvati was angry that her husband was offended. If the husband of a chaste lady is criticized, any chaste lady will become angry. What to speak of Mother Parvati? So for that reason, he pacified Parvati. But he did not pacify to get relieved from the curse. Right? Then Shiva told Parvati, another counseling session. Shiva said, Parvati, you are very beautiful. But the beauty of the devotees of Krishna is greater than your beauty. By not getting affected by your curse in even to the slightest extent, Chitraketu nullified your curse. Narayana para sarve nakutaschana vibhyati svargapavarga narakeshu apitulyartha darshinaha. So one who is Narayana para, one who is dedicated to Narayana, he is never affected by anything. whether to go, whether if he has to go to hell or heaven or go anywhere else, he is ready for anything. A demonic birth or a devotee birth, it doesn't matter to him. Right? He performs devotional service. Like that, he glorifies Lord's devotees. And Parvati became little ashamed. And that Vritrasur, that Chitraketu became Vritrasur as the son of Tvashta. So that's the background. So this whole story came because the Tvashta thing we are discussing, right? So Vishwarupa was accepted as the guru of demigods, right? So actually we were discussing the dynasty of the daughters of Daksha. So next two chapters continue the dynasty. So other people who were born from Daksha's daughters were described. And one story, one last story in 6th canto is Diti married Kashyapa and she got 49 Maruts as her sons. And Maruts became the demigods along with Indra. So Parikshit Maharaj asked a question. Maruts were the sons of Diti. So Diti's sons are generally Daityas, demoniac. How are they accepted as demigods? The answer is this. So once Diti was thinking that because of Indra my sons died, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, I should get a son who can kill Indra. With that intention she served Kashyapu Muni so nicely and asked him a benediction that I want a son who can kill Indra. Then Kashyapu Muni said, oh my god, I am tricked by her. She served me so nicely and she impressed me and then she has this material motivation. He said, okay fine, no problem. I will give you one vrata called Pumsavana Vrata. For 1 year you have to do this vrata. That's basically devotional service unto Lakshmi Narayan. So you should do this vrata. If there is any deviation, you will get a son who can become friend of Indra. If you don't deviate from the vrata rules and regulations, then you will get a son who can kill Indra. So she was doing that vrata and Indra came in disguise to assist Diti in her vrata, but his intention is to find fault in her vrata and then kill her embryo. So he found one fault. He entered her womb, cut her embryo into pieces, 7 pieces. They became 7 children. Then he cut each of those 7 embryos, 7 parts into 7, again 7 each, total 49 pieces he has made. They became 49 demigods, 49 Maruts. Now Diti got up from sleep and then saw that there are 49 children and Indra is also standing there. She asked Indra, tell me the truth, what happened? Then Indra told the whole story. Then Indra also said, my dear mother, I am sorry, I came with this intention. So I accept all your sons as my friends, demigods, 49 Maruts. So because of performing devotional service, there was a transformation in Diti's heart and Indra's heart also. And the whole episode had a very pleasing ending, although it had a very unpleasant beginning. Right? So like that, in the 6th canto, various stories are described. And Parikshit Maharaj also asked this question in the beginning of 7th canto. Yeah, Diti's contemplation is fine. Other people also may get this doubt. Because Krishna, in the form of Varaha and Narasimha, killed Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu to favor Indra. So people may think that Lord is partial. So what is the answer for this? Parikshit Maharaj asked this question. So to establish that Lord is not partial, but he is just reciprocal, the Sukadeva Goswami told this whole story of Narada Muni and Yudhishthira Maharaj's conversation in the 7th canto. And in that conversation only Prahlad Maharaj's story will come. That's the link to the 7th canto. So that completes 6 cantos of Bhagavatam. Thank you all very much. Grinthraya Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Can we meet at 10:45? It's 9:50.